Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Well, welcome back, and it is now or never. You know, I go through this, it is now or never, just to help you recognize the fact that we don't have time. We don't have time anymore to try to figure out what we need to do. We really need to start acting. And so one of the things, and I appreciate this, and I totally forgot, and I'm not sending out a constitutional minute. I did not send one out this past weekend. I will be sending one out probably this coming weekend. And so, because I've got a lot of things to do, and I need your help. And if you live in a red state, please help me get your state's new legislative emails, because these folks need to start hearing how important it is to call for an emergency session, to stand up. Because bottom line, if we don't send them an email, and I'd love it if you did it, and as a matter of fact, if you want to be a point, I will CC you on the email. This way, you'll see what they're being told. I mean, we post these things up on Reclaiming the Republic as well, and you're more than welcome to forward it. But what's more important is that you can take that email and you can share that with your group or other people that you share emails with, and you can help them recognize what we're telling your state legislators and hold them accountable to it. Folks, the secret of all of this is holding government accountable. So without going into some details on, you know, what's going on specifically in Wyoming and other places, by the way, it doesn't matter, you know, where this is happening, where you are beginning to hold your county commissioners accountable. We're very focused on the county commissioners, and that's only because they are the ones that need to understand their duty and obligation over the state constitution and over the state legislature. They need to tell the state legislature that they need to start reeling in the federal government. And they need to stop rubber stamping everything that the federal government is doing. They need to create this, the bill that we have that's going in South Dakota and into Wyoming. They need to create the same bill in their state. They need to actually start auditing the federal government and joining this. It's really this simple. It is really this simple. If we could get good men to act, because I believe our society still has a lot of good men, we are not at the point of Sodom and Gomorrah. I don't know anybody. As a matter of fact, I do know that there's a lot of evil in the world. There's no doubt in my mind. There's probably more evil and debauchery in today's world than there probably was in Sodom and Gomorrah. And what I mean by that is Sodom and Gomorrah may have been sexually immoral. I mean, just, you know, over the top. However, they weren't keeping people as prisoners, political prisoners, and then stealing their lives and their organs, you know, to make money so that they could, you know, help evil people stay alive. And so when we, and if you understand the ultimate, you know, act behind all of that, it is the ultimate of evil is trying to obliterate the consequences of sin. Now, why is it that many people need livers, and why is it that many liver transplants and or kidney transplants and or other things, you know, other types of organs? A lot of times, you know, it's just maybe a bad hand of cards that they've been dealt, but there are plenty of those, like David Crosby, who has basically destroyed their liver from riotous living and then felt entitled, you know. And it's one thing to be using the donor, you know, the normal donor system, but when you use your money to actually jump ahead of the line, to actually, you know, break the protocol that we kind of establish as the best process for ensuring that everybody has a fair shake, then that's one thing. I mean, that's bad. But it's another thing to just get on a plane and fly to China or fly to any of the next countries that are going to start doing this and offering, you know, a free liver, free whatever. I mean, we have to start recognizing that, you know, this is an evil world. But again, I can't emphasize enough that there are plenty of really good people out there, folks. And so our society has not been totally subdued. It has not been totally perverted or what have you. I will say this, and I will ask you, if you have noticed at the beginning of the year, because I have an old Galaxy S5, I think is the phone, and I have two of them. I have two Galaxy S5s. And you go, well, why? Well, because I bought two. And actually, I bought my second one at, you know, it was a refurbished phone. So in other words, it's basically pristine. It's never been used. And after the beginning of the year, I noticed I look at my phone and I'm not getting any reception. It's like instantly something happened to my phone. I don't believe that's the case anymore. Now that I've been powering up my other Galaxy S5, I believe that they have created an obsolescence in that phone because, well, how old is that phone? It goes back to, what, 2015? I mean, it was being phased out, I think, in 2016. And so, since it was being phased out in 2016, yeah, it probably came out in 2015. So it's going on 8 years, 7 years, 8 years, right? Well, maybe that's going to be happening to your phone. Now, a lot of people have told me, well, it may be the 5G rollover, and 5G is going to be forcing everybody to get off of 4G phones. And that's another case. Here is another case of where technology is forcing companies are deliberately creating an obsolescence into their devices so that it forces you to get a new phone or get a new device. I can't believe that they would do that, but I do believe that they have. And I will find that out because we have a Samsung tablet that we bought, I want to say 2017, maybe 2018. And I think that Samsung tablet was, so I need to look it up and find out what model year it is. But we'll find out if in the next few years it becomes obsolete as well. And I say that because it's brand new. We've hardly ever used it. We don't use computing devices. We actually use computers. And we don't have a need to have that connection so that we can interface with Facebook wherever we go. And we pin ourselves safe from Biden's classified documents and so forth. But I know there's lots of people that have gotten on board with that social interaction and so forth. It is what it is. But the reason I'm saying this is that companies are designed to make money. And do I fault them for deliberately making something? Well, I think they need to be known for that. If Samsung is doing that. So here's the question. What about Motorola? Has Motorola's phones got that same, you know, built-in obsolescence? Is everybody doing it? Because if everybody's doing it, we're all screwed. But in the old days, there used to be companies that actually designed, you know, a product to last. I'll give you a good example. Curtis Mathis. Curtis Mathis wanted to sell you your very last television. Now, they built them that good. And there's many electronics out there today that you can buy that are designed to outlast you. That equipment is designed to actually surpass your lifetime and be able to, you know, bequeath that to your children. And most people go, well, why would somebody want that? Well, certain things, folks, if you don't understand like audio and some types of technology, certain things don't change. Like in audio, you have to have amplification of the signal so that your speaker can drive that. So you can have the speaker with the amplifier. And I know this isn't a tech show, but I'm trying to help you understand that you can buy equipment that will actually outlast you and never have to replace it. And we're living in an era today where even still conventional audio equipment, home theater equipment, those types of things are still going to be a standard, and we don't see, you know, they may be going away to those people that want to have, you know, the minimum footprint, like the, you know, the satellite speakers and everything's already powered up, you know, where they have the amplifiers in the speakers. And if you go down that path, they'll still sell those things. And the market may grow on that, you know, people buying that. But when it comes down to it, you're going to realize that you're going to be immersing yourself, and you are immersing yourself into a throwaway society, because most all of that equipment is not designed to last. Now, we talk about sustainment, and we talk about, are we, you know, we hear the green folks talking about sustainment, but how much crap do they buy this, you know, these millennials and these people that are buying into this, how much crap are they buying that's designed to be thrown away? I mean, they complain about the throwaway society, and they, I was talking to a millennial over phones. No, actually, it was over Windows and computing. And his paradigm was that, you know, we have a throwaway society, and green e-waste is a real problem. And I'm thinking, wow, this guy has no idea how great it is to buy things that actually last, to make your dollar stretch longer and to get the most out of your money. I just can't believe that you people have bought into this throwaway society, but they have. I want to wrap this up, and when we come back, we'll get to the obligatories and we'll get into the strategy. We'll be right back after these two promos.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so back to this obsolescence that's kind of built in. And let me do this first. If you have a smartphone and your smartphone has lasted you a long time, like the very first generation of the iPhone or what have you, if there's that level of technology that's out there in these phone devices, because, and by the way, we do not use our phones as computing devices. These are just phones that we use for texting and so forth. So we don't need all the apps and the latest, you know, screen resolutions. Basic stuff is fine. And we don't need, you know, that that real computer feel in the palm of our hands, you know, with all the computing power, because we're not going to do that. We're not going to go there because there are other portable devices such as a laptop that can actually do, you know, a lot more for you and, you know, do things. I know the phone, they've created all these interfaces for the phone to do that. But bottom line, when you carry that phone, and if you haven't read Woe Nelly, 5G technology, and so forth, and the book is on our website, reclaimingtherepublic.org. I think it's on maybe either the Constitutional Articles page and or my Red State Talk Radio podcast page, or you can go to the other links, which is you'll find Orlean Culp, who is the author of that book, and you know we actually have the book there too. But what you can do is you can buy that book and look at how nefarious these transmitting phones are. I mean, this is why those people who use the devices to do all of these things, you have to keep your phone closer to you. And by the way, do not put the phone up to your head to talk. Go with and try to minimize any type of wireless functions that you have. I mean, it's one thing to have an infrared remote control at home, but when you have all these radio, you know, transmissions, you're only bombarding your body with electromagnetic energy. And some of these energies, and that's what you'll find in this book that was written by Orlean Culp, a lot of these energies that are emitted from the cell towers, from your cell devices, your computing tablets, and so forth, they're very harmful. And to put them straight up to your head, one of the things that's come out of this, and one of the things that I had learned from that book by Orlean Culp, was the fact that tumors in a person's head is on the rise. I've known a few people myself personally since the advent of the cell and the smartphone and so forth who have come up with tumors in their heads, not cancers, the type that killed them, but these, you know, these tumors that would kill them because they keep growing. As the tumor grows, it starts cutting off their blood circulation or other things. And I have a friend that had a tumor cut out of his out of the side of his head that it would have killed him, but it wasn't cancer. And so we now have these new phenomena. You know, the old scientific rule, results take time to measure. And so when society starts doing something that is new, it takes a while to figure out, you know, what is the impact on that, on society, of that new thing that they're doing, like holding a phone up to their head. And so the studies are coming out that it is becoming more and more problematic. And one of the other things that's interesting is a recent study just came out about living longer. And so this study basically attributes one of the number one factors, and I may be getting this wrong, but one of the number one factors is networking. And what I mean by that is that, you know, if you have lots of friends and you're engaged socially, and when I say engaged socially, I don't mean via isolation socially with social media and so forth, but you actually sit down and you converse and you connect with people, you will live longer, because that engagement and that empathy and sympathy and those emotions from having all of these connections somehow is really, really healthy. And so I saw a TED talk on it, and I think the gal that did this, and it was like a 2-minute talk, and it's fascinating on how all of these different factors, you know, they said diet and exercise and all of those things had very little to do with actually extending a person's life. The few things that were in common with people that lived really long wasn't because of exercise or diet or those types of things. It had more to do with they had very large networks of people that they were connected with and involved with. And so if you can find that, if you can find that study, just watch it. It's just 2 minutes long, but it helps us understand these things. But getting back to trying to connect all of this stuff. So obsolescence is important in the progressive plan. And it's not just important in creating devices, because that's like capitalism, right? It's, you know, capitalism is driven by profits and trying to make more money and growing your company and so forth. And we get to a point where we cross that line to say we want to make money, and then we want to make products that will help us make more money, because the tobacco manufacturers and all drug manufacturers and all these other people are creating these things that make you dependent, or make you want to have more and need to have more, come back and buy more so that they, you know, go faster. As a matter of fact, you'll find that soda today is not the same as soda in the past, because soda will expire nowadays. And I remember that you'd be able to get a Coke, and you'd be able, you know, for the summertime, and not have, you know, not drink Coke for the whole wintertime, and that Coke would taste just as good 2 years later. Today, man, if that Coke is past that expiration date, something's happened to it. It tastes like crap. Whether it's Coke, Pepsi, whatever soft drink you drink, that's not the same. They deliberately make these things so that you just can't let it sit on the shelf, because they want you. They make more money when you have to buy stuff because you had to throw it away. So when they do those things, that should really be driving us to get away from those things. And we should really be trying to look towards the truth, or better products, things that last. One of the things that I want to connect here is because when we look at our education system has gotten us to embrace this throwaway concept. And they do this with lies. And so when we actually start throwing away our history, the only way they can do that is by lying. And so they create this throwaway mentality that everything that we knew in the past and everything that we've been doing, you know, is being proven to by these communist educators that we've all, you know, those are all lies, or they're all bad. And I'll give you a good case in point, because Christopher Columbus, it was just something that kind of hit me in the face when I was watching a program where an Indian, an American, Native American, and there's no such thing as really Native Americans, but, you know, because people migrate. I mean, the Indians themselves migrated and so forth. And so I don't know if there's any really natives, but they were the indigenous people at the time we came here. But here's the interesting thing. The societies weren't much different. And as a matter of fact, when you really start examining the people and what they have and what they've done, there wasn't a lot of differences. One of the differences with the indigenous people, just like many of the tribes in Africa and many of the tribes, the indigenous people throughout the world, many of them did not embrace advancement, technology, innovation, and evolving knowledge and the thirst for knowledge. It seemed like many societies were locked into what we would call a, not progressive, because I think Western society was a progressive society. And I don't mean progressive ideologically. It was trying to progress. It was trying to evolve into a better society, and it was embracing enlightenment. Many societies, though, did not embrace enlightenment. They lived on the traditions of what they were taught, because this is what they were told to believe as the truth. And so those societies, when all of a sudden they have to face a challenge, now all of a sudden they're out there, and they're, what's funny is they embrace a lot of things. I mean, you know, to make money, to get involved, to be successful, I mean, they realize that the world has changed, and it has changed because of the progressive societies or the enlightened societies. It's not necessarily changed because of communism, because communism was really just an adaptation to Plato's Republic that occurred in the 1800s. I mean, prior to that, what we had was monarchies or dictatorships such as the Ottoman Empire and, the Rome and all of the English Empire and so forth. We evolved in lots of different ways, government and so forth. But the thing is this, there were societies that were, maybe we want to call them complacent. Maybe they were just happy with the way things were, that they didn't want to aspire to be better or provide anything different. They lived the life that they were taught to live. And so many societies were that way, and enlightenment changed that. We'll be right back after this.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so there is one fundamental difference between these two societal paradigms. One. And the difference is stark. And it is this. That the societies that did not advance, their foundation was in control. In other words, a form of subjugation of society that society didn't advance. We didn't want to accept these things. We can't accept these things. That is a dark or a subjugative society where they want to have full control over what you can do. There is a huge difference in Western society and what we basically find in the American experiment and what we were doing. And in Western society, we were, because the empires that kind of controlled the world, they were progressive. The Egyptian Empire was a progressive society. One of the things that they were founded on was seeking the history of other societies. And so as they started learning, and the interesting thing about the Egyptian society and their education was they didn't rewrite the history of others that they looked at. They only, tried to capture it, and they may have had their biases of how they looked at it, but they didn't try to explain certain things to sell it to you like we see in history today. Oh, well, you know, there's always this underlying tone of how they describe this, you know, like it's white man, or it's the patriarchal, you know, the man holding woman down, sexist, racist. There's always those underlying messages that they try to put into your head so that you allow yourself to be subdued. And that right there is how they control you. And so one of the things that has come out that we start recognizing, and I think you will recognize this too, the reason why they're teaching critical race theory and all of these things is the lies that they have to teach is necessary to subdue our society, because our society is a society of good people. Good people trying to improve. People who accept the enslavement and their entrapment and what have you doesn't necessarily mean that they're bad people, but they're not good people trying to improve. They've accepted their position, and we have to wake people up to no longer accept their positions. We have to start challenging everything we hear, see, and do. We must challenge things. So what makes me different maybe is I don't necessarily, when I hear something being spewed out of the mouth of anybody, whether it be history or what have you, I have to challenge it. I invite you to do the same thing. That's the beginning of becoming a critical thinker. Now, what had happened a little while ago was I sat down and I was listening in this program about this lie that was being taught by, again, a Native American that was teaching the history of Christopher Columbus, that his whole goal was to come here and enslave the people. And this supposed teacher was reading out of his journal, and what she read, everybody completely accepted it. Not one person challenged it. And so this is how classrooms are today. We have a bunch of kids in class that have been taught not to challenge. They are taught this at a very young age, that they need to accept everything that they're being told as gospel truth. It almost sounds like the Catholic Church of the Roman Empire, where they've lied and they deliberately lied and they told those lies to control. In other words, at that point in time, the Catholic Church, you know, there was a reason why we called them the Dark Ages, because society didn't progress that much. It was only through liberty and enlightenment that society started, you know, just growing on steroids. And if we look at from the Enlightenment era at the end or the fall of the Catholic Church, or actually, because it really began with the Magna Carta, that's when things really started kicking off. But it was a little spark that happened out on this little island in the Atlantic Ocean, the North Atlantic, which was Britain. It started expanding and expanding. And so as Martin Luther in the 1500s, and it swept through Europe, I mean, Sir Isaac Newton in later on in the 1600s, you know, he started challenging Aristotle and science, prevailing science, because people had completely embraced and accepted it. Nobody challenged it. Nobody thought that they could be as smart as Aristotle, I guess. And then after that, many people realized how Newton was able to prove things and be able to go down this path of creating laws, you know, fundamental laws like the law of gravity, and challenging Aristotle. The fact is that we started challenging him and started challenging further concepts and creating new theories and laws and so forth. Then all of a sudden, they start coming in and they had to start controlling. So if you really want to see what the downfall of a society is when they start controlling enlightenment. They try to start subjugating you. And the ways they do that is through slowly taking your liberty. Folks, liberty is what we're fighting for, and we have to start challenging our government, not just our educators. We have to challenge our county commissioners. So before I go too much further in this long monologue, the only way we can do this is civilly. If we become hostile, then everybody shuts us out. Have you ever gone after somebody in a really, you know, I'll just say a hostile or negative tone, and you just attacked? Do you think that person's working with you? Do you think that person is, you know, there to, you know, help you, you know, advance your agenda or anything like that? No, not really. The only way we get people, you know, Carnegie, you know, Winning Friends and Influencing People, you know, talks about the importance of that as a success. Now, there are other books that I've never heard of or read, but they have to be out there because people use these things that by using fear and attacks to subdue people. In other words, if you treat people like animals, you can condition them to behave like animals, and that's what we're seeing. And we're actually seeing these other societies that were controlled by, you know, an ancient way that this is what we have to do instead of actually challenging. One of the things that I thought was the highlight of enlightenment in the medical era was in the early 1900s when, I forget the guy's name, it's at the tip of my tongue, but and I probably get a few texts on this, but very few people really know about this guy. He was a scientist and doctor in, I want to say, Boston, Massachusetts, I think. And he was working in an area where people were terminally ill. They were going to die. And he had access to a scale, and he was able to weigh a body when it died. And so, you know, asking questions. Is there, you know, some component to the body that when you die, you lose, you know, any weight? Is there any mass, spiritual mass to your body? And when this guy actually weighed, I think it was like 22 grams, something like that, you know, and this scale was able to weigh that. And so he had a few, but he only did it a few times until somebody came in and said, stop. That was the beginning, because I think we were, you know, constantly trying to challenge and try. I believe that when the scientific community heard, this was the beginning of stifling this advancement and this exploration into spirituality and starting to accept the carnal world and reject the spiritual world and a spiritual side of our life. And so when we start looking at what's going on, it is critical, folks, that we start challenging what we're being told. So I kind of connected all of these different dots to, you know, are we just accepting a throwaway society? Because when we look at the prevailing thought of people being brought up, they see no problem with throwing away history, with throwing away, you know, and believing, you know, the big lies of history. Are we going to soon start creating monuments to, you know, to people that's, you know, like Karl Marx? I mean, Stalin, that's one of the things that they just recently put up in Seattle. I think it was either Lenin. I think it was a statue for Lenin. A guy that subdued and subjected the people to tyranny and took away their liberties. Anyway, we need to get into the status of Wyoming. Actually, I do that tomorrow, because what I want to do when we come back is I kind of want to talk about, you know, what you need to do and how we can actually advance. When you have conversations with people that are going to reject what you're going to tell them, we cannot come at them hostily. We really need to try as much as we are upset with them. We have to try to be civil. I'll be right back after these two promos.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Well, folks, I can't tell you enough how we're living in a real evil world, and I think everybody's recognizing this. And this all stems from my trying to help you understand it's now or never. If we don't begin challenging, if we don't start thinking out of the box, and if we can stop doing what we're told. And I even recently had a conversation with my wife regarding technology and how your browsers are deliberately spying on you. Firefox is now, you know, comporting to this, where they're reporting, because we no longer provide any data in browsers like Edge and or Chrome. If you use Chrome, if you use Safari on Apple, or if you use Edge, then you are being spied on, because those companies are deliberately capturing your data. And so this goes to point that Firefox, my wife was on this one website that she, you know, first time she'd ever looked at it. She, you know, just perused for a good 10 minutes looking at a couple of things. And it's like a retailer website, e-commerce. And so she thought nothing of it. And she closed the tab, you know, didn't find anything worth buying. So must be a bad place. Anyway, inside joke, outside joke, whatever. But the next day, she was checking her emails, and that company, that tab that she's never corresponded with or done any business with, sent her an email and said, "Hey, you know, we noticed that you were looking at these types of things. Maybe these things would interest you." Now, folks, if this doesn't scare you, how did they get that information? She never did any business with them. How did they get her email? Now, these browsers do you so much, you know, they provide you so much conveniences that we quickly go along with that. Fact of the matter is, whenever you put data into a form on a website, 9 times out of 10, the browser recognizes that you're filling out a form. You're entering your name, email address, and all these other things. Do you want us to keep this information? This is why when you go from one store to the next store, you'll have to automatically populate that, or it'll automatically populate it for you to that website if you want to start filling out that information. You can enter that. They now have the ability, when they're reaching out and establishing cookies and looking at you, in other words, they now have active systems. It's not passive. They now have active interfaces with your browser to look at everything you have in your browser. Now, even though there may be some level of encryption on your password, the other stuff isn't encrypted. So what that means, folks, is that we accept these concepts, these constructs in our society that, you know, we no longer have liberties. We no longer have a right to be secure in our persons where people can't. We don't challenge these things anymore. We can no longer allow this complacency to continue. If you're going to be a patriot and you don't want to be vulnerable, you need to start securing and cleaning up your digital footprint. And you can. You need to get away from having phones as a computing device. You need to stop accepting what people tell you. When we hear things, you hear something in a TV show that you go, wow, that's a pretty dark view of Christopher Columbus. You got to challenge it. 9 times out of 10, the history documents are out there. You can actually go and get his journal. And of course, if you're getting his journal in English, then there's a good chance that it has been translated, because I don't think Christopher Columbus wrote in English, right? And so if you get his actual journal, you'll actually see the original language. And then this is where Thomas Jefferson and the framers, because they learned multiple languages, they were able to read those things straight from the person's hand, without any interpretation, because 9 times out of 10, when you're translating, there's usually, that word doesn't work in our language, but, this is closest. And that becomes problematic. But bottom line, as a person that understands that language and reads that, and even though you kind of understand that, it doesn't translate, you have to be even well immersed in that language to understand some of those nuances. But that, and I don't want to get into the technical details of those nuances, but I'm just trying to prove the point that we have to be very careful. Always look at what you're looking at. In my training in the intelligence community with, imagery interpretation and so forth, we had to look at deceptive targets. We had to look at things that the bad guys, the Russians and the Chinese, they would put things out that wouldn't be the real thing to make you think that, that's what they've got there. And they do that as an art of deception. They do that to deceive you. And so there's camouflage, concealment, and all of this type of technology that we deploy. Well, they're doing this in our society. And so we have to start challenging, are you really seeing something that they're telling you? It may seem like a legitimate or that's the same thing, but it may not be. They'll show you the Bible. As a matter of fact, how many people, when you go and you stay in a hotel and you pick up the Bible and you look at the Bible, not that this has happened, but I find it easy to believe that if you actually picked up that Bible, it may be some real twisted version of the Bible, because 9 times out of 10, we don't challenge what we have. We don't question what we're looking at. And now is the time we really have to start changing our patterns of just quickly and simply accepting everything. It's very important that when I stand in front of an audience, I always want to believe that everybody in that audience is capable of asking me, where did I get that information? How did I know that information is true? And I can cite where I've gotten, you know, this information from Alexis de Tocqueville, Democracy in America, and so forth. So when I actually cite something, I'm actually citing somebody. And I'll give you a good case in point. In Democracy in America, Alexis de Tocqueville identifies that there was a case in a legal court up in New York that the judge threw a case out because the plaintiff was an atheist. And the judge threw the case out because no atheist, you had to be a Christian in good standing to go into the court system in America, because they didn't trust people because they knew that that person wasn't accountable to a higher being, to a higher, you know, to the creator, to somebody who would hold them accountable for lying. And so our courts did not accept anybody that they couldn't trust, that they had to be a Christian in good standing. And I'm telling you, that's how it was. And even Joseph Story talked about why that was that way in his commentaries, you know, in his bibliography of his life and so forth. And he basically said it was due to the fact that they couldn't, these people that didn't believe in Christ and weren't good in their, or active in their communities. They weren't upstanding and in good standing. And that good standing is important because that means that they were going and they were, you know, they weren't committing crimes. They were in good standing. And that's a phrase today that we really don't understand what that really means, good standing. Most people, they go, well, because we don't hear in context what that means. That here is a person that is trying to live, you know, a good moral life, is going to church, and everything that they do, they are civil, they're just in good standing in their community. And so here's the important takeaway, that we need to actually start looking and going towards the truth. And when we start hearing things, don't feel, embarrassed to ask the question. As a matter of fact, many of the people I work with, and I work with you, I actually work with my audience, whether you call me and we're working directly or not. I believe that many of you are learning and actually starting to take these things to heart and are doing good things. Never hesitate. If you've got a question, where did I get that information or what have you, I love citing my stuff and I love sharing these citations because knowledge is power. You hear me say this all the time. I live on these premises, right? That reasonable people equally informed seldom disagree. Knowledge is power, but it's, power isn't, you know, this intelligence is not actually intelligence and power until we act upon it. And it's the same thing with this concept of when we act, if we all agree and we succinctly act and demand, you know, then we can apply that concept of we the people are the fountain of political power, where we can guide and direct our public servants. And the whole point of today's show was to try to get you to start realizing we live in a very evil world. It's now or never, and we don't have time to be accepting things anymore. We need to challenge everything. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.